Welcome to the Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goals of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with the chronic illness of sickle cell disease. And in the studio with me, I have Nurse Pat Corley. Hi, Nurse Pat.
Hi.
Today we have the thrill of speaking with Joelle Darbonnet and Shabonica Wiggins, two of our favorite sickle cell warriors, and they have an organization called Bold Lips for Sickle Cell. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
So I'm so excited to finally have you guys here talking to us. The work you've been doing is amazing, and you are truly, truly two, I don't know, super warriors.
Leaders.
Our youngins who are going to come and step up when Pat and I start doing that world tour we're going to do someday, right? That world cruise. So tell us a little bit about yourselves, okay? So I'm doing it by alphabet. So Joelle is going to go first and then Shamanika, okay? So Joelle, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, my name is Joelle Darbonnet. I am a 29-year-old sickle cell warrior, type SS, and I love doing what I do as far as advocating and making sure the world hears about sickle cell.
Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in advocating for individuals with sickle cell disease.
I got involved through social media. Social media was the platform that allowed me to speak out about sickle cell. I started advocating when I couldn't go to sickle cell camp anymore, so I became a junior counselor. And from there, I started, you know, from a junior counselor, I became a counselor. And then I helped with starting a sickle cell support group. From there, I started speaking at hospitals for the interns and all that good stuff. And then Dr. Lakia Bailey hit me up and was like, hey, come out to Advocacy Day in Washington, D.C. And that was my first time actually going on a trip for advocacy and awareness and all that good stuff. And the rest is history. And, you know, me and Shamanika did our thing for Bold Lips for Sickle Cell, and it's been a whirlwind 3 years.
So a self-starter here. All right, Shamanika. So tell us a bit about yourself and how you got started in this.
Okay, well, hello again. I'm Shamanika Wiggins. I'm 28. I also have sickle cell SS, born and raised in the lovely Dallas, Texas. And I have a six-year-old daughter named Rory. And I actually got into sickle cell advocacy before, you know, being a sickle cell advocate before Bold Lips for Sickle Cell started. It was kind of on accident. Just like Joelle, I began to share my story and just personal tips and advice of my own on Instagram. And people, thankfully, people, you know, gravitated towards my advice and my energy and my vibe and always looked to me for answers on things. And so when the fellow warrior Shamika McFarland made the cry out for someone to create a challenge for sickle cell, you know, I felt obligated and I felt driven to create something that we can do for sickle cell. And that's how Bold Lips for Sickle Cell was born. And Joelle was already blazing on social media as well, and she saw what I was trying to do. And she hopped on board, and we've been doing this thing together for 3 years, like she said, and it's been really fun. It's been some ups, it's been some downs, but it's been really amazing. We got to meet you two wonderful ladies, and I'm just happy with life as a sickle cell advocate right now and working alongside with Joelle.
I find it difficult that you guys could sum up all of this experience in less than 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But, we're going to talk some more about that.
Let me just share that I came into sickle cell many, many years ago because I'm an old person.
Old gang, right?
And at that point, people with sickle cell disease didn't have a voice.
That's right.
And I was there because they didn't have a voice. And to listen to the voices of people young and wise beyond their years in the sickle cell arena like you two is such an incredible blessing and honor to be in your presence working side by side with you to make a difference for people who still have no voice and suffer disproportionately from a condition where society just does not do what we all know they should do. So I just want to thank you for taking the lead and making a difference for other individuals with sickle cell disease, those that have sickle cell anemia like yourself, and those who have another form of sickle cell disease. They all suffer the same, and because of what you're doing, clearly it may not make a difference today, but in years to come, I'm sure that we'll see a different outlook on how people are viewed who have sickle cell disease. So again, thank you for all you do.
Thank you for your such kind words. That means a lot. I was over here blushing really hard. one of my main motivations to be a voice for those with sickle cell and the reason why I do put so much into it is I have three younger cousins with sickle cell. And right now they're all pediatric patients. And I hope that the fight that me and Joel are doing and the all of us other advocates who are working so hard right now, you know, my goal is that our work that we put in so much into is for them so that they can have it easier, much, much easier than we do. So my three little cousins keep me, when I feel like, oh, people don't appreciate what I'm doing, I'm just going to stop. I have to remember that I'm doing this more than just for myself.
When I hear you say that, I just get chills. I mean, you guys hear me talk about how fourth generation of mother in my family and to have a child with sickle cell. And, you know, I remember my mother's battles, right? And I remember my grandmother's stories. And a lot of times I kind of get to that point where sometimes I'm just overwhelmed, you know, when you've had to explain to the ER doc that maybe they should read the chart before, you know, before they come in and change meds or deny meds. Or when I sit down to a family dinner and Marissa's not there and they kind of look at me and say, like, what did she do now? You know, and my answer is she's breathing. And this is my family. And I get so sometimes, I don't know if it's sadness, it's fatigue, it's all that stuff. But then I think how different it is for me as a mother and how different you guys are. I mean, with my brother, he'd had a stroke and he was in PARD, but there were other people with children who had sickle cell. We never saw them. We never heard about it. We were so isolated. And my dream for Marissa was that she was going to be able to have a life despite that. And I think back about it, she had some friends from camp, right? You remember Melanie?
Yeah.
She had Melanie and she had LaKeisha, who we lost recently. But there wasn't anybody really that she could identify with, right? There were the poster. Remember the poster girl kids? And so when she got to a certain point and she aged out of camp, there was nobody there for her. There were no activities. There were no place for her to go and have that sense of community, that sisterhood. And so the work that you guys are doing, you know, again, it's one thing hearing stuff from us moms and nurses, but to hear it coming from the mouths of your generation, it's life-changing. It's life-changing for us because we worry about what's going to happen if we're gone or when we're gone on that trip, that cruise around the world. And to see you guys come out and use the tools that you do. And I'm not going to say the Facebook and the Twitter.
and the Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the, I missed one, the Instagram. But, all right, so what we're going to do now is, now that we've said our thing, we're going to come back, and we want you guys to tell us a bit about your latest endeavor, this tour of the HBC. So hold on. This is Access Advocacy, and we're speaking with Shamanika Wiggins, Joelle Darbonnet, and Pat Corley. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on thepowerofvoices.com. Welcome back. I'm Adrienne Shapiro on Access Advocacy via thepowerofvoices.com. And today we're speaking with Joelle Darbonnet, Shamanika Wiggins of Bold Lips for Sickle Cell, and Nurse Pat Corley. So tell us a bit about your latest endeavor, this tour with the HBCs, how it came about, what you're doing.
Yeah, well, the College Sickle Cell HBCU tour came about. We were at the Leadership Summit, the Sickle Cell Community Consortium Leadership Summit, and I just had this idea that we should go into the different HBCU campuses and educate the students about sickle cell disease, as well as, you know, sharing our empowerment efforts as well. We just recently had our first stop at Morehouse. We invited all the schools surrounding it, Clark Atlanta, Spelman, and Morehouse, and we had a two-day event. First day, we focused on sickle cell education, and then the second day, we focused on sickle cell empowerment. We had keynote speakers, Dr. Razan Hodges and Ms. Shawnee Rawls, Ms. Black, Georgia, USA, and it was an amazing event. We got to speak with the students who are going into the medical field. And we were able to have an open discussion with them about sickle cell and gave them more of an eye-opening experience and kind of putting a face to sickle cell disease.
So for those who don't know what HBCU means, can you share?
Historically Black colleges and universities. So we are focusing on the population that is most affected by sickle cell disease. We all know that sickle cell predominantly affects African American and Latinos in the U.S. more. So we wanted to kind of target them.
And we also, you know, other than sickle cell awareness and empowerment and talking to soon-to-be healthcare professionals, we also stress the importance of sickle cell trait and trait testing. And also the importance of Black donors to donate to the bone marrow registry and donating blood because of how different the genetic makeup of African descent people is. So we also, you know, a lot of them didn't know all of the things that come along with sickle cell trait as well. So, you know, a lot of them thought they were just there to hear about sickle cell and hear about something that they didn't have to worry about. But it was a great day, the first day, teaching them about the trait as well. It was very informative, interactive discussion with the students. And you can tell that each day they all left learning something and that they genuinely appreciated our presence there on campus.
That's great. That is really, I mean, I think about it. I think about how I used to have to send every time Marissa changed classes or in high school. And we used to go and prepare a little packet to take to the teachers and then do a little spiel to the other students. And even when she went to university, UC Riverside at that time was doing quite a bit of research into sickle cell disease. But it wasn't something that was discussed campus-wise or on the university level.
We also talk about disability resources on campus as well.
Great.
So for the sickle cell patients that do come, we want to make sure that they're well equipped for their college experience. And then also sharing the college experience for the sickle cell patient. We did that as well to let, you know, the future doctors and nurses and, you know, medical professionals, let them know, hey, this is what we go through. It's sometimes a lot harder for us. But that doesn't mean that we don't have the passion and the skills and, you know, all these wonderful things in us that make us great.
So it sounds like you guys had a wonderful package. Is this a package that you're going to replicate and take to every campus?
Yes, ma'am. We're big on collaboration and working with other organizations. So to have this tour, we partnered with Sickle Cell 101, which is another amazing education organization that uses social media to help educate the public. So we hooked up with them, and we definitely have been working with, you know, the Sickle Cell Community Consortium, Sickle Cell Champions Association, Sickle International, and then, of course, our amazing sponsors, Bluebird Bio and Be the Match.
So do you also plan to take this to colleges that are not traditionally African-American schools, but have large populations of African-American students?
That's definitely a goal. Right now, we're focusing on just the HBCUs, but it is a goal to get to bigger universities, mainstream universities, because Black students and students with sickle cell go to colleges everywhere and not just to historically Black colleges. But we felt and seemed it would be easier, you know, and somewhat more effective to go where the bigger population of those affected by the illness would be able to utilize the resources and information that we were sharing. So that's why Juelle thought of this bright idea, because this is her brainchild. And I'm really happy how the first stop turned out. Because of our stop, students with sickle cell were able to meet each other and had no clue that they both had sickle cell, because they were empowered to talk about it until the event. So,
yeah, I can really see that. How did it work? So there were 2 days. Let's kind of take us through the event. It was a 2-day event. Is it held in the midst of others, like a health week, or is it just sickle cell? I mean,
I don't think there were any other programs on campus going on at that time, because
great.
We had Elijah Powell on campus, so he told us the best time to have it. And we had a room reserved just for us during our time block, and the students came to us. And as you said, they were able to see the presentations, hear the speakers, and enjoy some food, some laughter, icebreakers, you know, made it a very casual and comfortable setting.
Then we did Sickle Cell 101, which was done by Clayton Andrews of the Sickle Cell Champions Association. Then we had Dr. Razan Hodges talk about why you should care about sickle cell disease, and then also he talked about chronic pain and chronic pain management with using cannabis. We had resources for sickle cell disease patients. And then, of course, we had like a question and answer portion, and that wrapped up day one. So day two, again, we had the icebreaker. And then, of course, me and Shamonica talked about the importance of sickle cell awareness. Then we had our keynote speaker, Miss Black Georgia, who did an amazing, empowering talk about facing it up, like taking your thoughts and just making sure they're positive and just bringing that overall positivity to the forefront. And then we had, you know, the Sickle Cell College Experience. We had a panel of Elijah and two other students from Spelman. And then, of course, we had Sickle Cell Warrior Charlie Black. He performed at the event. And then, you know, we adjourned and we just had an amazing time.
I guess my question is, if the listeners would like to see any part of this, can they find some of this on your website? Or are you planning on creating from this material a web event where you've put it together and those of us in the community can see it and experience it, even though we aren't there?
Well, all of the clips from it, from everything that we live streamed and recorded, can be found on our Facebook as well as our Instagram. And we also had Demetrius Wyatt, also another amazing sickle cell warrior.
Yes.
He was our videographer and photographer for the event, and he put together an amazing trailer, you know, highlighting the Morehouse stop. So that's also available. I believe that's been shared on our Facebook as well. So there are chances to get a peek at how the things went down and the fun that we had, and I can also see the trailer that Demetrius made for us.
I know you have a website, and I know you have Facebook, and I know you have Instagram, so I'm going to give you two the opportunity to give the information on that out yourself. So
they can find us at www.boldlipsforsicklecell.com, and they can also find us on Instagram at Bold Lips for Sickle Cell. They can find us on Twitter, BOSSC814, and find us on Facebook, Bold Lips for Sickle Cell.
Great.
We do everything through social media, so if they can stay connected to our social media, then they always will know what's going on with Bold Lips for Sickle Cell.
Can you guys share more about your organization? Is it a 501c3 organization? How are you able to sustain yourself?
We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we sustain ourselves off the goodness of others through donations, through our t-shirt fundraisers, and through that, and help from the sickle cell community, from those within and outside of it.
Yeah, and also sponsorships like Global Blood Therapeutics and, of course, Be The Match and Bluebird Bio. We're able to get some sponsorship from them.
One of my favorite things is to see Marissa in her purple Bold Lips t-shirt. And so people often ask where that comes from. So we always say you can order it online. You also have them, do you have them when you show up at various events for sale? Can people buy them on site when you're attending a conference, or is it all done through mail order?
We try to always show up with shirts at events. But being that me and Joelle, we work together remotely. Joelle's in Atlanta, I'm in Dallas. It's just a lot easier for us to handle everything online. Mm-hmm. And right now, currently, we have a t-shirt fundraiser going on right now.
Yes.
People want a purple hoodie of their own. They can get one right now if they go to our social media page to find the link for the custom ink.
We kind of skipped over the really fun part of how you came up with Bold Lips and the Bold Lip campaign, because I love seeing those pictures. So can we talk a little bit about that?
I came up with that idea because I'm a girly girl through and through. I always have been, and I always will be. And when I was pregnant, I spent a month of my pregnancy in the hospital, and it was so boring, and I had nothing to do, and I had just got into makeup. So I would do my makeup in the hospital, put on my lipstick, take my pictures, and so many people would come in and thought that was so strong of me to do. So when Shamika challenged everyone to come up with a challenge just for us, that was the first thing that I could think of, because that's something that I already did for myself to make myself feel good. You look good, you feel good. With help from a few other people, they helped make the name a little more polished to Bold Lips for Sickle Cell. I shared the idea. Like I said, Joelle loved the idea, and thankfully a lot of other people loved the idea, and the rest is history. So it started because it was just something I always liked, and I felt like, hey, people either like it or not, and people liked it.
Well, what I love about it is that everybody can do it, and from what I see on Facebook, everybody does do it. it's such a fun thing. Now, Pat's been trying to get me to wear lipstick for now a year. I even bought some lipstick from you, Joelle. It's really beautiful. I'm going to try this year. So I'm going to, at least when I run into you guys, I'm going to try to have some on.
So every time you see her, remind her, Bold Lips for Sickle Cell.
Bold Lips for Sickle Cell. But it really is true, though. When you put it on, it does have this effect of making you happier, and changing your mood. It brightens your face.
And I don't think it's just that, because your lips are what you speak through. Mm-hmm. And the message comes out so clearly that you have to speak boldly. Mm-hmm. And so your campaign surrounds the whole thought of people coming out of hiding to speak boldly about the condition that they live with.
That's exactly what the goal is.
Right.
That's the whole purpose of our campaign. You know, we do this year around. So it's not just in September. We go hard in September, but we allow our sickle cell warriors to know that, you know, sickle cell is a daily fight. We fight this fight 24/7, 7/11, 365, even leap years. Like, it doesn't stop. Sickle cell advocacy and awareness doesn't stop for us. So we used the bold lipstick to spark conversations. You know, when you see somebody out with some amazing lipstick on, you're like, hey, I love your lipstick. Well, I know I am, and that's just the person I am. But we wanted to spark conversations and get people to realize that, you know, sickle cell is nothing to be ashamed of. Yes, we go through, you know, trials and tribulations, but that doesn't stop us. And, you know, we should be able to share our stories and speak about the experiences that we go through as sickle cell warriors, and just boldly speak up instead of hiding.
Well, I noticed we had a hospitalization, and I have to say we, because, of course, it affects all the family. Marissa's the one that's, like, in the bed more, and she was doing her lips. She did her lipstick. And so I'm kind of in the corner, and she did her lipstick, and she did this crazy pink-purple thing. And so a nurse came in. The nurse says, how's your pain? So she looks at the nurse and says, oh, it's a 10. And immediately I could tell this nurse is thinking, how could you say, you know, you're a 9, a 10, and you've got on this, you know, lipstick and sparkly eyeshadow? Marissa looked at the nurse and she said, I know you think I don't look sick. And I know you're wondering why I'm doing this. She said, but I have lived with this pain all my life. I live with pain. So I can do some things with pain that is so horrible that you couldn't even imagine. I can do some things. And so I've decided I'm going to do those things whenever I can. And the nurse just sort of looked at her, you know, and she's like, well, you know, I'm not, something to the effect she wasn't judging, but in fact she was judging. But I really think, hearing what Pat said, I mean, that's really what it did for Marissa. It was like, I have this pink lipstick on, and you're looking at me like I'm crazier or I'm a liar and all side-eyed. And so, you know what? I'm going to speak my truth. And I hadn't thought about that before until she really said this to this nurse. And, you know, the nurse kind of backed out. But I noticed later that her attitude towards Marissa really did change. And so there's something about being able to speak boldly and succinctly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's the overall goal, you know, that she used her voice as bold as she could, and she put that nurse in her place the correct way. She didn't have to yell, she didn't have to curse, but she educated her about her life and her struggle and what she does to help herself cope with that besides getting pain meds. And that's the overall goal. You know, we can't advocate for ourselves without being rude and ugly to someone, and they'll get it, you know, they'll bag back and check themselves without us having to really, you know, legit check them. And that just reminds me of something that I really dislike about adult care, because when we're kids, we're taught distraction therapy. They wheel us down to the playroom. They have the child life specialists come bring you games and coloring books, and it's taught. Distraction therapy helps with pain. But as soon as you become an adult, they see you distracting yourself in any kind of way, they instantly think, oh, you can't possibly be hurting. But all my childhood, this is what y'all told me to do. This is what y'all taught me to do. I'm supposed to stop doing it as an adult? No. The pain gets harder to bear as an adult, so we are the ones that need the distraction more than the kids. So I'm glad that a lot of women, like your daughter Marissa, does their makeup in the hospital, because doing their makeup is their break from the pain. That's their escape. And when they see how they look, they feel better. It increases the happy endorphins, and you feel better. Look good, you feel good. And that's the whole goal, to use those beautiful bold lips to tell the nurses how it is, tell your family, your friends, and those around you how it is the correct way.
So I'm just going to share a little bit. You guys know that I'm an adult nurse that takes care of, or took care of, the adult population of people with sickle cell disease. So I just want to flip the script a little bit and say that people who work in the adult world are not warm and fuzzy. Number one. Number two, people who work in the adult world are dealing with extremely sick individuals who, you know, in pediatrics, yeah, you have sickle cell pain, but you don't have all the damage to organs. So you don't have all the other complications. And so what nurses tend to think is that anyone who comes in the hospital as an adult is truly, truly so ill that all they're going to do is lay in the bed pretty much, or do the rehab that they have for them to do. And I think maybe we have a responsibility, because there's power in your words. We have a responsibility as advocates for sickle cell disease to kind of restructure the way people think about taking care of people with sickle cell disease. And one of the things that I think we truly, truly have to do is to identify what things help us to get better. And this is what I always tell people with sickle cell disease. Know what pain score is your functional pain score. Mm-hmm. Okay. When you come in the hospital, some people come in thinking that all their pain is going to be gone. Most people with sickle cell disease go home with a level of pain. So what is your functional level of pain? Mm-hmm. What kind of things work best for making you feel happy to a point that you can heal when you're in the hospital? And those distraction things all go under that. Putting my makeup on, putting on a nice gown, painting my fingernails, whatever, you know, getting a facial, talking to my friends on the phone, whatever works for you. Because I don't think people that work in the adult world, and I probably didn't until I worked with people with sickle cell disease, really think about what distracts you from all of the pain. Because I don't think most people understand pain.
They do.
And so you don't have the ability to extract and come up with all of those, you know, concepts that we really need to start identifying. So I think the way we manage sickle cell disease and the way we interact with people with sickle cell disease, that whole way that we look at things has to be re-examined so that we get to a point where we give respectful but good care to people with sickle cell disease like we would want our parents to have. I can remember having a surgery, and I can remember my sister, who's also a nurse, going into the surgeon and saying, I want you to treat my sister like you treat your mother that you like. And that's what we need to be able to say. We want you to treat people with sickle cell disease with the same care and respect that you would treat anyone else who came in the hospital, who was ill, and who you wanted what was best for them. And so I think our conversation has to evolve in order to change behaviors that we see going on. And I think we have to respectfully do that. So I don't know what you guys think about that, but that's just my feeling on what I, you know, in defense of both healthcare professionals, because I think there are healthcare professionals who genuinely care, but they don't know how to care for you with sickle cell disease. So if you can just kind of give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I know that's something that we focus on. We speak at different conventions, sickle cell conventions and symposiums, on these patient panels in front of nurses and medical professionals. And we do take the time to educate them on, you know, the sickle cell patient experience.
Right.
And what we go through.
Right.
And how we can make it better and come together.
Yes.
And bridge that gap between the medical professionals and, you know, the patients, and start to form a bond of trust, you know, and just know that there are doctors and nurses out here who have our best interest at heart. And who want to see us live our best life.
Let me just say that you're speaking to the choir. So what we're going to have to do is go outside of the people who truly, truly care and have come to hear what you have to say, and go and talk to the people who don't have the opportunity to get that same information.
Well, that's what we're trying to do with the tour.
Yes,
right. We're trying to get them before they enter into the medical field. You know, if we can get them while they're young, while they're fresh, while they're have that wide eye interest, if we can get them then, and, you know, able to show them, hey, you know, compassion,
right,
and to telling them, hey, this is the face of sickle cell, and kind of changing the narrative around the sickle cell patient.
Right.
We don't want to be stereotyped. We aren't drug addicts. Like, all of us aren't drug addicts.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to break that stereotype, break that stigma.
So my suggestion for all of us, because I think we don't really look at how the hospital system works. You know who is the person who can easily poison the whole thing? The nurse. She's in the center of the whole thing. She's the interaction between you and the doctor. And so I think that we really have to give, I know we're focusing on medical students, but we've got to focus on those nursing students. I'm just putting that out there because I think we need to think about everything as we get out there and we try and change the way people respond to things.
I think I'm hearing something from the two of them. I heard Jewel mentioned changing the narrative.
Yeah.
And Shamanika mentioned the bold lips. I mean, the using the lipstick and thinking of it in terms of setting the stage for that message. I think that what we can, as advocates and patients, because we're patients, when we're sitting in that bed, we're warriors, but we're patients, and they're perceiving us as patients. So the patient communication, I think that maybe if there's a way we could come up with standardizing our communication. Like, there's certain things that people need to know. And you hit on it when you said sickle cell in a child is different than sickle cell in an adult, right? So that would be one of the things that we need to have them understand. Two, it would be that distraction is something that is taught and learned from childhood, but distractive techniques for children are different than distractive techniques for adults, where kids can look at cartoons or people are even hired to come in and distract them. As an adult, then I need to find my own distractions, whether that's my cell phone. For me, I personally like movies that blow things up, but, you know, but whatever. So we need to be able to talk about that. We need to have something where, like Pat said, so I have a functional level of pain, and if I'm at my functional level of pain, I'm going to be at home going about my life. If I am uncomfortable, I'm probably at home taking my meds and heating and bathing and resting. But if I am here in this ER, then I am, what's another word for that? So I have a functional level. I have an uncomfortable level. What is that level?
I have an I'm incapacitated.
Well, so if you
I'm
use
incapacitated,
I have an emergency level.
You have an emergency level because if you say incapacitated, they're going to look at you like you're moving.
I was saying the way I like to explain it to people without sickle cell is I have my comfortable daily level of pain that I always feel that I can ignore. I can push through and do every. It's not even pushing through. Yeah. I can go about my normal daily routine. But when the pain gets so high to where I can't ignore it, I can't leave my mind, I can't push through, I can't tolerate being a mother, a girlfriend, a daughter, I can't tolerate any of that, then I know, okay, it's time for me to seek help with this because what I'm doing here at home, what I have at home, it's not keeping me
right.
comfortable where I'm able to just do life. And with my, I was just in the hospital.
We saw you.
We saw you. We're stalking you. I should say that.
So maybe it needs to be a debilitating level of pain.
Yeah, I think we need to. Yeah. I think this conversation, I mean, it's supposed to be just a chat, but maybe this is a working session. So maybe we can come up with those categories to help us communicate that. So I have my functioning level. I have my push through level. Maybe that's because I'm hurting and I'm still going through. And maybe we have an emergency level where that means I'm coming in. And maybe we have a, what's that other level? So you guys, there's a job for you. You need to come up with 5 levels. And how's that for homework? So we've started some of them.
Sounds good.
No, I mean,
so the joke is for you guys that you never talk to me about anything
because
I will find you some work.
Oh my God.
It's
so true. But I like this. I like this. I like this idea. Because I think if you guys can like start this movement so we can standardize our way of discussing our pain.
So we need some pain descriptor.
We need some pain what?
Descriptors.
Pain scripts?
Yeah. Descriptors.
Oh, scriptors, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe we can actually come up with those, and then we can have them link them to their tool that they like to use at the hospital.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be us taking control, and I like it. I like us coming up with describing how our pain is. That's brilliant. I'm so happy. Okay, but I got to have a break thing right now. So you guys talk. We've got another 10 minutes. So let me do my break thing, and then we'll come back, and let's talk about a little bit about your greatest challenges and what you would like to say to people who are facing their greatest challenges, okay? This is Access Advocacy, and we're speaking with Shamanika Wiggins, Joelle Darbonnet, and Pat Corley. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on thepowerofvoices.com. Welcome back. I'm Adrienne Shapiro on Access Advocacy via thepowerofvoices.com, and today we're speaking with Joelle Darbonnet, Shamanika Wiggins of Bold Lips for Sickle Cell, and Nurse Pat Corley. And we're just talking about the wonderful work that they're doing with the Bold Lips for Sickle Cell campaign and their advocacy organization. Both of you have had some amazing challenges, and it's so interesting to me that when I said to you, tell me about yourselves and, you know, how you got here, neither of you mentioned what everybody else on the outside would look at and say, oh my God, these girls have really been through it. So I'm going to ask you, Shamanika, you are amazing. You're beautiful. You've got this amazing child. You have this life that you've built. You're following your dreams, and you have this disease, which comes with so many starts and stops and challenges. So tell us, what has been your greatest challenge, and how did you get over it?
Okay, well, I honestly don't know what my greatest challenge is because my most traumatic experience with sickle cell, I don't remember a lot of it, thankfully, but when I was in college, I went to the ER for swollen knee pain, but some kind of way I was diagnosed with the flu, and I was given way too many fluids, which resulted in a very acute pneumonia, and I coded a couple times. I had to be rushed to ICU, and I spent a good 2 weeks intubated in ICU. You know, I was placed in a coma for a while just so my body would stop fighting so hard. And like I said, a lot of that I don't remember. It's just flashes because they have you so heavily sedated when you're in the ICU intubated in that condition. But I remember just feeling confusion and anger because I know when I got there, I wasn't that sick and that my sickle cell isn't why I was currently strapped to a bed with a tube down my throat. So I was very frustrated and irritated, but I was also very hopeful and faithful in God because I was just like, I know I can't leave yet, not now. But the whole time I was there, there was like a shadowy figure at the end of my bed that just gazed at me the whole time. And when it was time for the tube to come out, for me to not be intubated anymore, it was the first time in my life, and I really think the only time in my life where I was okay with calling it quits. It was just the hardest thing I ever had to do, to breathe again on my own. My mom was screaming at me. My aunt was screaming at me, the nurses. And I told them, Mom, I'm okay. Just let me go. Like, I've had a great life. They told me no. You know, the respiratory tech, he ran and got a CPAP machine, and thankfully I started breathing again. So that's my biggest physical challenge that I've had to overcome. But my current challenge that I'm still learning to overcome is listening to my limits, my barriers. I always want to do everything I set out to do, and I don't always listen to my body. And I'll push through it. I've gotten a lot better, but that's one of my biggest challenges because I feel like I can't allow my illness to stop me from doing anything I set my mind to doing. But at the end of the day, I have to remind myself that, Shamanika, this illness is part of you. You have to listen to it just like you listen to your mind, body, and spirit. So that's the biggest challenge I have. I've gotten a lot better. I learned how to pick and choose the things I'm going to do, but I'm still a work in progress because it's sometimes where I will throw listening to my body out the window and say, YOLO. But I've learned that those days are unnecessary. So that's how I try to remind myself, and that's what keeps me overcoming the challenge, but the challenge is still there. And I feel like, so I'm my biggest challenge, my drive and my will to not want to be stopped or beaten by anything. It's a challenge at the end of the day because I have a serious chronic illness that I must listen to when it's speaking to me.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a personality thing that I really understand. Pat's over there shaking her head.
I think we all understand that.
We all understand that one. I mean, and the whole...
It's not exclusive to sickle cell.
Well, I know for me, I wanted to be normal so bad. Yeah. I wanted to fit in. So there was one point in my life where I was ashamed of sickle cell, and I didn't want to tell anybody that I had it. And I wanted to go about my life like I didn't have the disease. So I was basically in denial that I had sickle cell, and I wanted to live the way that everybody else without sickle cell was living. And it almost killed me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In July of 2007, I went into the hospital just thinking that it was just a regular sickle cell crisis and that I was going to be out in a week. And within 12 hours, I was in ICU on a ventilator because both lungs had shut down and my fever had skyrocketed to 108. I was basically on my deathbed. They told my mom that, you know, I wouldn't make it through the night, and to call the family because pneumonia had taken over. So I was in ICU for about 10 days when I was in college. And I remember coming out of ICU and, you know, just being like, what happened? Like, what in the world? And I saw my brother coming down the hallway and I was like, oh my God, something bad has had to happen for him to be here. Like, he's supposed to be in Japan right now. But obviously something bad went down. But after I got out of ICU, I started feeling tingling in my fingers and toes. And I kept telling the doctors, you know, something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but something's wrong with me. Within 24 hours, I was paralyzed from the neck down. I couldn't move anything but my head. They did a million tests on me, and they finally came to the conclusion of that I had Guillain-Barré, which is, you know, an autoimmune virus that basically my body attacked itself thinking I was the bad guy and stripped my nerve endings. So my nerves had to basically regrow. And we all know when, you know, a nerve misfires, that's a feeling of electricity. So throughout my whole body, I was feeling like I was being electrocuted, like I was on fire, like fire ants were just all on me. You know, it was just a terrible time. And I had just turned 18, had my first year in college, you know, had my first apartment. And so now my life is crashing, you know, I'm paralyzed from the neck down. What am I going to do? So I think my biggest thing to overcome was just that, you know, saying, hey, obviously I'm still here. And obviously there's a purpose for my life. Thank God that I had, you know, people around me that wouldn't allow me to quit, you know, because there were so many times where I just wanted to end it all.
Wow.
So for me, I think that is my greatest, you know, trial that I'm overcoming.
Wow. Okay, so audience, now you know why these are two of my most favorite and most amazing young women that I have in this journey I've been on, I've ever met. You know, to our listeners, if you would like to reach out to Shamanika or Jewel, you can reach them on Facebook. So it's Shamanika Wiggins, W-I-G-G-I-N-S, and Jewel Darbonnet, D-A-R-B-O-N-E. Also, you can find them on Facebook under Bold Lips for Sickle Cell. And, of course, make sure that you buy those beautiful t-shirts and sweatshirts and things to help support them. And their work is very important. And so we're going to sign off now, ladies, young ladies, and know that we love you and we keep you in our hearts and our minds and our prayers at all times. And we stalk you on Facebook.
Thank you.
All right. Love you.
Thank you.
Okay.
We love y'all.
Love you guys.
I'd like to thank Shamanika Wiggins, Jewel Darbonnet, and Nurse Pat Corley for joining us today on Access Advocacy. You can learn more about our organization on our website, accessadvocacy.org, or on the Access Advocacy Facebook page. That's AXIS. advocacy.org. Join us again next Tuesday on thepowerofvoices.com at noon Pacific, or listen anytime on demand at accessadvocacy.org. You'll find all our programs there. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. Thank you for listening.
I've got to keep on pushing.